You're tuned in to the Grace Curley Show podcast. Listen to Grace live daily before Howie's show. For station and time, go to gracecurlyshow.com. Enjoy.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Yes, indeed it is. This is the Grace Curley Show. We thank you all for joining us on this snowy Monday. I hope you're staying cozy and you're getting ready. I hope you can enjoy the snow day. I actually think that would be a fun segment at 2:30 if we have people call up and give their experience with some massive blizzard. Most of them I was not alive for, the ones people talk about. But I'd like to know, you know, some people get married during a snowstorm. Some people give birth during a snowstorm. Might be an interesting topic. But before we get to that lighter topic, I do want to continue here a little bit with this story about the Lincoln Project, because I was thinking about this during the break. It's one thing, there's certain things people know about other people, no matter what circle you run in. If you're in politics, if you're in, you know, the medical world, lawyer, there's people, they have reputations, and it can be your choice to not get involved. You hear rumors about people, you just go, gross, that's weird. He's a weirdo, whatever, you move on with your life. And that's okay. But there's a difference between not saying anything and trying to kill stories from people who have the guts to say something. If you choose not to say anything, and if you decide that you're not going to make it your business, that is your prerogative. But when I would start to use the word complicit is when you start spiking or killing or undermining stories from people who are brave enough to take down toxic people. I'm using all these progressive words here, but I do think he's a toxic person. And I give those young guys credit for having the guts to stand up and say their truths. And then you hear about these media people and these Lincoln Project board members who are running around trying to get the story killed. And it's gross. That's when you're complicit. That's when you're part of the cover-up, as the Democrats like to say. But in Red State, they were breaking down some of the numbers, and I find these fascinating because we're talking big money here. The Lincoln Project was no small grift. These guys really capitalized on the rabid hatred of Donald Trump, and they brought it all the way to the bank, okay? So let's break some of this down. Back in April, Red State's deputy managing editor, Jennifer Van Laar, took a look at some of the early numbers involved in the Lincoln Project's fundraising and expenditures. The sign of this being a honeypot endeavor were there from the beginning. She also looked at the motives behind George Conway's runaway criticisms of President Trump. So George Conway, a lot of people think, because he supported Trump for a while, then he never got offered a job, and then he turned on Trump. But I don't really care about that. George Conway does not interest me. I mean, just listening to him on Mika today, talking about how he was speechless about these accusations, he seems like a complete phony. As of its last FEC report in mid-December 2020, the Lincoln Project raised $87.4 million in the 2020 election cycle and spent $82 million. Of the money it received, nearly $52 million came from individual donors in amounts greater than $200. Initially, it was reported in the media as something of a point of pride for the Lincoln Project that a majority of its contributors gave amounts less than $200, because that would signify that you're really grassroots, that it's everyday Americans giving to the Lincoln Project, when it was not. There are 10 vendors listed in their FEC reports as having received $500,000 or more from the Lincoln Project in 2020. Summit Strategic Communications of Park City, Utah was the top vendor, being paid $24.8 million during 2020. So Summit Strategic Communications, remember that name. SSC is owned by Reed Galen, one of the co-founders of the Lincoln Project. Galen worked on both the 2000 and 2004 campaigns of President Bush, 43, and then was the deputy campaign manager for John McCain in 2008. Another co-founder is Steve Schmidt, John McCain's campaign manager in 2008. The various FEC disclosure documents show the funds were paid to Galen's SSC for video production costs and media buys opposing President Trump's 2020 re-election. I wish we could get Peter Schweitzer on right now because this is the stuff he explains really well. The media buying for these political campaigns is massive, and it's how a lot of these people make money. It's a big-time grift for a lot of people. So a founder of the Lincoln Project, through his political media company, was the recipient of almost $25 million in spending by the Lincoln Project on a media campaign to oppose President Trump. The second largest recipient of spending by the Lincoln Project was Tusk Digital, which received $20.3 million. Tusk Digital is owned by Ron Steslow, another co-founder of the Lincoln Project. You noticing a theme here, Jared?
I am.
Inspector Jared suspects something's amiss. Something's afoot, as they say. One of the early criticisms of the Lincoln Project spending reports was the amounts of money being paid to these firms for production costs for the ads as compared to the amount of money being spent on media buys to run those ads. Okay. Now, this is where it does start to make sense here, okay? This is from Open Secrets in May 2020. That seven-figure spending comes as the group spends relatively little on direct political activity. The super PAC shelled out $364,000 to Galen and Steslow's companies to run independent expenditures opposing Trump. What I gather from this, and they break it down here, they say, hey, let's create a Titanic-like campaign ad in terms of production values, pay ourselves massive amounts to do so, and then run it a few times on CNN at 3 a.m. when the rates are cheap. So they're paying all these millions of dollars for these commercials that they're producing and they're making money off of, and then they're not spending a lot of money to place these ads. That's what I gather from this. Again, my media buying expertise is about as good as my GameStop expertise, which is to say not great. But that, to me, is what that is. It says, see how that works. But what was the plan after November 3rd if President Trump was defeated? They said they had no plan after President Trump, but that proved to be not true because they did a lot of work with the Georgia runoffs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this could really kill them, this whole story. But we shall see. It is interesting, though. It does remind me of Bernie Sanders. You know, you make all this money and then you pay someone to place the political ads or to make the political ads, and that person makes millions and millions of dollars. It's a beautiful thing. I wish, honestly, Jared, I might run for something.
I think you should. I mean, this is quite the grift they got going on. Why didn't we think of that?
Do you know how to make commercials?
I do.
All right, cool. We're in business. I do want to talk
everybody who wants to donate more than $200, or if you got $24 million lying around, I promise you we'll make a commercial.
Yeah, we only want donations that are in the $1 million range. We're not looking for the grassroots here at the Grace Curley Show. Nine top New York health officials have quit as Cuomo scorns expertise. So I talked about this a little bit in the first hour. I do think there's a shift happening here. I think that it's a combination of Trump being gone.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
It's not exactly clear, but there is something happening because I'm noticing a shift. And I think the biggest shift I've noticed is Andrew Cuomo. The coverage is changing. And I'm not impressed. I'm not going to sit here and tell you how wowed I am that Chris Cillizza finally thinks that Andrew Cuomo's heroic ways are not what he once thought they were. That's pathetic. Chris Cillizza, we've all been saying it for months and months and months. But to see the media and to see Andrew Cuomo kind of crumble like this in such an epic fashion is a beautiful thing. I'm not going to deny it. And now all of his health officials are quitting because he's out there saying he doesn't trust them. Now, when Trump had any skepticism towards the great Dr. Fauci, he was the worst person in the world. It was just another reason he was the worst person in the world, because he was questioning the experts and he wasn't listening to the science. Now, Governor Cuomo was going out there saying people died. That's what it is. It is what it is. And he's saying, here's the exact quote. When I say experts in air quotes, it sounds like I'm saying I don't really trust the experts, Mr. Cuomo said, because I don't. And now he's probably, I would guess he understands why these people are quitting. I mean, it's just relentless the way he's been treating them. And this whole thing, this whole rollout was his idea. They had a different rollout in place, and he insisted that he wanted it. And I'll give you the exact thing here. The troubled rollout came after Mr. Cuomo declined to use the longstanding vaccination plans that the State Department of Health had developed in recent years in coordination with local health departments. Mr. Cuomo instead adopted an approach that relied on large hospital systems to coordinate vaccinations, not only of their own staffs, but also of much of the population. And clearly, if you go to one of those maps like they have on Bloomberg, where they tell you where people, how the rollout's going in certain states, they give you really good numbers. You can see what percentage of the vaccinations have been used, where you guys rank. New York's not doing too hot. So his plan did not work. And finally, the media is saying, you stink. Like, you didn't do that good of a job. And you wrote a book during this, and you got an Emmy, and you got a Ted Kennedy Award for Inspired Leadership, and you've been hiding the real death numbers of in the nursing homes. And he's digging his feet in. You love to see some of these people finally have to answer. Even if it's very late in the game, I still like seeing it. February is recognized as American Heart Month, but talking about supporting heart health is not enough. Nearly half of U.S. adults have heart health concerns. Another thing I do to help my heart every day, and it's very easy, because a lot of people have blood pressure problems. A lot of people struggle with heart health, and you kind of can psych yourself out. You can think that it's so hard to get a hold of or to try to fix it. And the truth is, it can be, you can start helping yourself with something very simple. It does not have to be a huge deal. You can take Superbeats Heart Chews daily. Just 2 Superbeats Heart Chews per day give you the cardiovascular support and promote the heart healthy energy you need every day. Superbeats Heart Chews combines non-GMO beets and clinically researched grapeseed extract, shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure rather than a healthy lifestyle alone. In addition to a healthy diet and exercise, supplementing your efforts with Superbeats Heart Chews to your daily routine is an easy decision. It's a very easy decision, and I just have to add in, because people ask me this a lot, they taste really good, and you're not ever going to be like, oh, I have to take a Superbeat, I have to get it down. They taste delicious. It's going to be like the easiest part of your day. You're going to look forward to it, if anything. Now, when you buy a bag of Superbeats Heart Chews, you can get a second for 50% off, plus free shipping when you make your purchase at GetSuperbeats.com/Grace. That's GetSuperbeats.com/Grace. GetSuperbeats.com/Grace. 844-500-4242. Call in, guys. We'll be taking calls in the next segment. I'm Grace, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. February is recognized as American Heart Month. Celebrate your heart health with Superbeats Heart Chews. Buy a bag of Superbeats Heart Chews and get a second for 50% off, plus free shipping when you make your purchase at GetSuperbeats.com/Grace. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Is this the end of the Lincoln Project?
Yes. I'm voting based off what I'm hoping. It's an aspirational vote. So I'm going to say yes, it is the end of the Lincoln Grifter Project.
57% of the audience is with you. They say yes, and only 43% say no.
Plus, I mean, the Lincoln Project is kind of not PC anymore. I mean, it's based off Abraham Lincoln, and they're renaming high schools because Abraham Lincoln, according to the left, was not a good guy. So I would think that, yeah, it's got to be the end for them. Or at least they got to change their name, if anything. By the way, I try not to read tweets too often because people get annoyed. But really, It's where the best roasts are happening, the best clapbacks, as they call them, the best dunks. I actually wrote a column in the Boston Herald this weekend, which you guys can check out, where I talk about how a lot of these senators and politicians should steer clear of Twitter, at least somewhat. They're getting too obsessed with, you know, fighting with AOC on Twitter, or, you know, making good points, or, you know, faux outrage. It doesn't really move along the Republican agenda as much as they'd like it to. But I do love people on Twitter who are like me and are in the peanut gallery and can just kind of put people in their place. I support those people. Tweet all day long, peanut gallery. That is your thing. And I want to read, first of all, Janice Dean had a great tweet. Andrew Cuomo had tweeted, New York is directly in the path of a major storm set to become a nor'easter as it approaches the East Coast later tonight. He then urged New Yorkers to keep a close eye on the weather. Janice Dean retweeted it, and she said, not a credible source on anything, except maybe the weather. Which is a direct shot at him, for one of his spokespeople had said that about her, being the weather girl at Fox. That was great. But then another thing I want to talk about is Seth Rogen. Do you follow him on Twitter, Jared, Seth Rogen?
I don't. I follow very few people on Twitter, actually. I'm not active on Twitter.
Seth Rogen on Twitter is one of the worst. Like, he is so sanctimonious and always getting in fights with people. And I saw he was in this argument with a guy via direct message. That's where most of these people do their arguing. And he said something like, you're not funny. I'm in the sphere. He's in the sphere of comedy. He decides what's funny. But he got his butt handed to him. Absolutely handed to him on Twitter. This guy, and his name is Gad Saad, started tweeting at him about how, you know, he's a fake socialist and he's fake this and fake that. And Seth Rogen saw it and asked him to explain it to him, why he's a phony. And this is what Gad Saad said back. Thanks for watching, because there was a video involved. Many young people are socialists when they are driven by immature impulses of utopia. Then they grow up. You are a grown man with tons of money. Your current stances are rooted in vacuous, empty signaling, rooting in a desire to belong in Hollywood. It takes zero courage to hold your stances within the entertainment ecosystem. You espouse BS rhetoric that wins you points at the cool kids' parties, but you are otherwise as ignorant as my out-of-order toaster. I'd be happy to chat with you on my show, as you have a very large platform, and as such, you have the opportunity to actually make a difference. Stop succumbing to the herd mindset. Learn to think critically. Learn the meaning and implications of socialism versus capitalism. You are among the most privileged people in the history of humanity. And yet, you walk around as though you are Che Guevara, revolutionary. You are the product of capitalism. If you are such a socialist, send me some of your money. I'm trying to build a research institute. Live out your convictions. If you are a socialist, you have no business being the beneficiary of the most capitalist industry in the most capitalist country in the history of humanity. Don't be a hypocritical fraud. Cheers, amigo.
Yikes.
So good. And this guy, this other guy from Dave Rubin, he's on Fox a lot. He said, Gad, as you know, I try not to tweet on the weekends, but two people texted me this. Dinner on me next time you're in LA. It's very true. A lot of these comedians, and I'm using air quotes for comedians, as Andrew Cuomo would say, if you take that as meaning I don't think they're funny, you'd be correct. I don't think they're funny. Then you have Jimmy Kimmel, and he goes out there and with a serious face says that he thinks the Reddit guys who brought down the hedge fund guys are Russians. It's back to Russia.
And these are their secret commie weapons.
What are you talking about?
Everything's Russia. And there's no self-awareness. There's no humility. There's no open-mindedness. It's absolutely... And the craziest part is that these people, the Seth Rogans and the Jimmy Kimmels, they think they're the brave ones. That's what I loved about that whole thread. Is like, you're not brave for thinking the same as 99.9% of your friends. And being rich... And living in LA.
You're so brave.
You are not so brave, Seth Rogen. I hate to break it to you. Guys, we'll be back on the other side. 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I have a few stories here I want to go through before we welcome on Howie Carr for our final segment. There's some big updates in politics. And the first one would be, did you hear about this story, Jared, about Andrew Yang?
I did not.
Bro culture. Bullying drove women on Andrew Yang's 2020 campaign to therapy. This story does not look good for Andrew Yang. One high-ranking former campaign official with a decade of experience under her belt said she was sidelined in favor of a 21-year-old man, then given a financial settlement to make a quiet exit. Another woman claimed she was fired from Yang's presidential campaign for reporting social media harassment from Yang's followers, which interviewed 9 former staffers. That was reported in Business Insider. Yang admitted his failed bid for the White House didn't make sure all employees were heard and respected. It seems like a lot of these Democrats have these issues on their campaigns, including Bernie Sanders. There's a real problem with the group mentality, I think. Like, that people don't feel respected or heard or cared about. It goes on to say, Allison Groves moved from California to Iowa to be a regional organizing director for Yang's 2020 run, only to end up driving around a field organizer. She was promised the job of deputy director, but the gig went to a younger man with a background in digital communications and no college degree. And they go on to talk about this bro culture. I don't know, though. I'm starting to wonder if maybe, and I'm sure all this is true, but the timing of it seems especially strange considering he's going to run for mayor.
Yeah, it's almost like they want certain people in certain places and don't want other people other places and will do anything they can do to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm getting that sense.
Fascinating.
Too. And everyone likes a good comeback story. Al Franken, do you remember him? There's sparking rumors that he may run for mayor as well of New York City. Because people have been, I read this story and I was trying to figure out what about it sparked this rumor. And all I could see was that he kind of like went to New York and was spotted at a grocery store in his old stomping grounds. And people started thinking, is he going to run for mayor? I don't see a world where Al Franken comes back this quickly after his scandal. He was part of the Me Too scandal. I mean, a less serious version, but the picture of him with his hands over that woman's chest, not a great look. And another update, Trump announces new impeachment legal defense team. If you've been following the impeachment story, it's set to really take off February 9th. The trial is scheduled for that date. And we'll see. I mean, I don't think they have any sort of case. It's unconstitutional to begin with. But I'm sure it will keep the Brian Stelters of the world occupied for a few days. And isn't that all we're really going for now? Speaking of Brian Stelter, listen to his take on free speech and freedom of, you've heard of freedom of speech, but have you heard of freedom of reach? Let's start with cut 6 first.
But while some cry cancel culture, let me suggest a different way to think about this. A harm reduction model.
This is my issue when people say, oh, the left, or no, I'm sorry, conservatives cry cancel culture when they're held responsible for their actions. And then when their people are held responsible for their actions, they get upset about it. You should be against cancel culture regardless of what side of the aisle you are on. Because it's like riding the tiger. It's eventually, it's going to come for you. That's what all revolutions do. Rebellions, they eat their own. So everyone from Brian Stelter to Tucker Carlson should be on the same side of this, which is you cannot cancel or silence people you disagree with. It is fundamentally bad for this country, and it does not bring about good ideas or good relationships between people who disagree. It's just bad. It's poison for free speech to say, oh, you said something wrong, so you're going to lose your job, and I'm going to make your life a living hell.
And again, trying to soft shoe it with the euphemism of harm reduction model.
It's the most Brian Stelter segment I've ever heard in my life. And then he goes on to say, yeah, freedom of speech, more like freedom of reach. This is Cut 7.
So how can that harm be reduced? Well, big tech platforms say they are removing lies about vaccines and stamping out Stop the Steal BS and QAnon cult content. Now, do these private companies have too much power? Sure. Yeah, many people would say yes, of course they do. But reducing a liar's reach is not the same as censoring freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is different than freedom of reach.
If you buy into things that Brian Stelter is telling you, I hate to break this to you, but you're Trump deranged. Saying that you're going to curb liars' reach? Who decides who the liar is? Who are the gatekeepers? You, Brian Stelter? So Brian Stelter today decides that Trump's the liar. And then tomorrow he decides that you're the liar. Do you see how that works? CNN has been the biggest promoters of fake stories and lies for years, including the Russian hoax. They promoted it. They talked about it. They didn't make any statements afterwards admitting that they were totally off base and wrong and full of bleep, to put it. I can't really think of a better way to put it. They never made any statements like that. But now he's saying that it's his job and it's the job of these big tech companies to curb the reach of liars.
Where was the reach curbing with Michael Avenatti and Julie Swetnick? I don't seem to remember any reach being curbed back then.
Thank you for bringing up Michael Avenatti, because I got to say, I picture Michael Avenatti. I think he's out of jail now. I think he does have a ankle bracelet or something, but I think he's not in his cell per se. Can't you just see him looking at this Lincoln Project stuff and just kind of like, ugh, shaking his head? Disgusting. They'll let anybody on TV nowadays. President Avenatti, I mean, he was part of CNN's downfall. Remember, they thought he was going to be president. They thought he was, you know, the savior. I think someone compared him to the Holy Spirit at one point. Didn't end well for him.
Not shock me.
Exactly. So Brian Stelter thinks that he's going to tell you what's true, what's false, what deserves to be talked about, what deserves to get airtime, what networks deserve to be played on cable and what don't. And you see how subjective this is? I was talking to someone about this the other day, and they said, we were talking about the Patriot Act and how originally it was meant to stop bad guys. And the person said to me, and I know that sounds elementary, but when I was little, that's how they explained it. Like, oh no, it's wiretapping, but it's to stop terrorists. So as a little kid, I'm like, well, I'm not a terrorist. So yeah, please stop them. But older people and wiser people said, this is kind of a slippery slope. And I said that to someone the other day and they said, well, as long as they're stopping bad guys, then that's okay. And I said, but what about when you're the bad guy? What about when you do something wrong or say something they don't like, and then they decide that you're worth blacklisting? Like 10 years ago, the bad guy was Osama bin Laden, and he was worth spying on. But then 10 years later, or I'm sorry, not 10 years ago, I'm getting my numbers mixed up, but you guys get my point. And then later, you fast forward, and people who work for Trump are being blacklisted. And, you know, Carter Page is being spied on. So things can change very quickly. The goalposts can move when you give people this power. And if you're listening to someone like Brian Stelter and you think that he's onto something, or if you think that Google should be able to delete thousands of reviews on Robinhood's app, then you're on the wrong side of this. And Barry Weiss, who's very much experienced her own cancel culture moments, that's why she left, I believe, the New York Times, she wrote a great piece on this, and she wrote The 10 Ways to Fight Back Against Woke Culture. And I really recommend reading it. There's a lot of things I think we can all do. Some of them are harder than others. She explains in it, she says, I get it. Like, it's scary. It's scary to stand up for things, especially now. But I think we all have to start doing it. I agree with her in that sense. Like, I think that these big businesses who get pushed around by these idiots on Twitter, by this small portion of the world who thinks they know everything and who are offended by everything, they have to start saying, okay, that's great that you don't like what we're doing, but we're going to do it anyway. And they'll move on. They'll find something else to be upset about. But if you let people like Brian Stelter decide who gets a voice, the only people who are going to be talking are Brian Stelters. And based off the ratings, not a lot of people like to listen to Brian Stelter. Jimmy Kimmel, SNL, that's all mainstream. That's all good stuff. But anything you like, Ben Shapiro podcast, Howie Carr, Rush Limbaugh, that's all gone. Nobody's going to want to listen to that because they think that that's not true. That's not truthful enough for them. They're the Ministry of Truth. They're big tech. They're big media. And I just have to say briefly before we bring on Howie, SNL this weekend, you know I watched it. I watch it every Saturday. No, I'm just kidding. But I heard from some people that they did not touch anything to do with Biden. Can you imagine? This guy, love him or hate him, I mean, there's more material here. He can't get the pen on right. He can't, you know, the dogs are running around. The media is completely fawning over him. And SNL can't cover it at all. No more politics. It was only political when Trump was in. It's really pathetic. And the Los Angeles Times had a piece. They said, maybe Trump did kill satire. SNL kicks off Biden era in remarkably weak form. And this guy retweeted it and said, wait until you guys find out what he did to journalism. It's true. Guys, when we get back, we'll be talking to Howard Lawrence Carr, figuring out what's going on with his show. He's got a lot to do and a lot to talk about. We will get to you on the other side. And we'll be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show, everyone. Before we get to our next guest, I have to let you know about this incredible deal. My friends at Aiden Pure have done it again. Starting today, you can get the Thunderstorm Air Purifier at the lowest price offered to my listeners. With code word GRACE, the Thunderstorm is available for under $90 and shipping is free. This New Year sale is for 1 week only and while supplies last. The Thunderstorm is a small device. You can hold it in your hand and plug it into the wall to purify the air from any odor. I'm doing it now. This could be pet odor, kitchen smells, tobacco, or that damp smell you may have in your basement. No filters are needed. I've seen units that are just like this, but they're bigger, bulkier, and they can cost up to $600. I always think to myself, why didn't they just order the Thunderstorm? The Thunderstorm doesn't take up floor space and it's quiet. Take advantage of this 1 week only sale and experience for yourself what all the listeners are raving about. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code word GRACE. That's EdenPure.com, code word GRACE. Again, shipping is free. If you're like me and you're trying to stop buying stuff from Amazon, this is a great way to start. That's EdenPure.com, code word GRACE. Howie Carr, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Grace.
So, Howie, what is the story of the day as far as you're concerned?
Well, I guess it would be the snowstorm. And we're going to have team coverage at around 3:10 with Biff Buffington, his niece Mindy Buffington, and also Frankie McDonald from the Maritime Provinces.
Oh, wow. The squad is back together again.
Yes, yes. And we also have a breaking story. Try not to let what I'm about to tell you destroy your faith in the integrity of the Massachusetts State Police. But there's been another arrest of a Massachusetts State Trooper.
Oh, boy.
A newly promoted sergeant, Brian Erickson, has been arrested. They took him. He was involved in a domestic dispute with a woman in Exeter, New Hampshire. Then he fled to Massachusetts. Apparently, the state police picked him up and returned him to Exeter, and they also confiscated a bunch of guns at his house.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, I mean, things were looking up for the Massachusetts State Police too, because it had been like 24 hours since the previous last scandal when, a lawyer in court that was suing on behalf of some aggrieved parties said that perhaps there was a big cheating scandal in the captain's exam. Although the state police denied that. They're not denying this one.
Do you think they have a sign at the state police? You know how people have signs in factories where they say they can write in how many days they've gone without an accident, but theirs is how many days we've gone without Howie Carr writing about us? And then they have to wipe it off and go zero.
I tweeted it out, and now there's a story up on the Herald website. We still don't know the details. I want to find out how many guns they confiscated. There's some interesting stories out there in state police land, shall we say.
Now, Howie, I know you listen to the show, so you probably already heard this, but I have to ask, what is your take on Jimmy Kimmel blaming the Russians for the GameStop Reddit saga?
I don't know. I got some stuff I wanted to read. You know, the New York Times ran one of the smarmiest, most classist stories imaginable. Dumb money beats Wall Street titans. And they had, you know, one guy was a real estate agent. Another guy was a high school student. And there was an evangelical minister and his wife. And they're making them sound like these people are like the, slumdog millionaires or something. It was just so obnoxious. This guy that masterminded it, he's from Wilmington, Massachusetts, originally from Brockton of all places.
Wow.
I mean, you think they would be happy that a guy from Brockton could make $20 million overnight. Oh, but he went to Stonehill College, so I guess he's not politically correct.
Hey, Brockton, city of champs.
This guy's the champ of the week. I mean, we'd love to get him. Taylor's been reaching out to him. He used to work at Mass Mutual, as a matter of fact, and now he's got he works out of the basement. He's got a couple of kids. He's got a slide in his front yard. He's got a rented house in Wilmington, and he beat these guys, and now he has $20 million in his account. I think it's a great story. It would take only the New York Times would have to be angry about this.
Oh yeah, it's such a feel good story. I'm sure your heart feels like an alligator. Howie, I have to play this sound for you because I always think it's funny the left always appears like nothing bothers them, and right now they have so much going for them. They have Joe Biden's president. They control the media. They control Hollywood. But I just want people to know that we are living rent-free in their heads. And I read a piece about this in the first segment. But listen to Jen Psaki bring up conservative Twitter.
And last thing I just want to do before we get to your questions, I often note I'm going to circle back. I hate to disappoint conservative Twitter, but I am going to circle back on a number of things, as we often do directly.
I think they should start mentioning the color of her hair. I think that would get to her even more.
Oh, Howie. I don't think that's necessary, but you know what I do?
Is that a natural color? Do you often see that color in nature?
But Grace? Howie, you know what I think is telling, though, is when people, because Jim Acosta did this too, they used to make fun of him and say, "Dear Diary, ... and he would DM people who would write it, and he would be so mad that they were writing "Dear Diary," and then people said, "Oh, he's following this, and it's getting under his skin." And then what do people do? They tweet it more. It's like you can't let people know what aggravates you. You're just feeding the beast.
No, exactly. Exactly. That was a nice interview you had with the guy who wrote the story about John Weaver. I mean, there's another great story. I mean, again, how can the New York Times write a giant story on the front page and not mention that these guys were doing Biden's work? Well, Biden had nothing to do with this.
But Howie, don't you think, too, about the Lincoln Project? And I said this a little bit earlier, but it's not just that people knew about it. It's kind of like the Harvey Weinstein, that people were trying to kill the story for John Weaver. People were going out of their way to make sure this didn't, see the light of day. That's what drives me crazy.
I love this, The Atlantic. And again, Grace, you're not old enough to remember this, but The Atlantic was one of the most respected journals in magazines. And it was based in Boston, right on Beacon Hill.
Yeah, I'm definitely not old enough to remember that.
About Trump and, disrespecting the war debt of World War One. And here's this thing from last year. Rove spread a rumor, Karl Rove, that Weaver had made a pass at a young man at a state Republican function. Weaver won't reply to the smear. Do we really think it was a smear now, Atlantic? Are they going to run a correction and say, correction, I guess it wasn't a smear?
Well, Howie, I said this earlier. I said, I'm not really into betting, but I would put my money on the idea here that maybe Karl Rove was onto something. Just based off some of the evidence. I mean, Ryan Gruduski said, we're looking at 100 people.
Right.
100, which probably means more than 100. But 100 people.
I know.
That's insane. Guys, don't miss Howie Carr's show. He's coming up next. I'll be doing Hate Mail Monday in my new segment. And also a weather report from Biff Buffington. And Lord, do we need it? It's about to start snowing. This is Grace, and this is The Grace Curley Show.